Welcome back. As we head into the third year of the pandemic, the U.S. is trailing other wealthy nations in containing COVID-related infections and deaths. A new report from the New York Times shows that U.S. COVID deaths per capita are the highest among peer high-income countries, and vaccinations have continued to lag. Our next guest joins us to discuss this and more. Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel is University of Pennsylvania Vice Provost of Global Initiatives, as well as former White House Health Policy Advisor. Dr. Emanuel, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. As I was mentioning, the U.S. has certainly been trailing its peers in its pandemic response. What do you think were the crucial missteps that got us to the point that we're at now?
Well, I think a large part of it can be attributed to the misinformation and the political polarization that hasn't allowed the country to get behind a unified approach. You know, when President Biden took over in January, he had a very good strategic plan, and they executed on the strategic plan. It was heavily focused on getting people vaccinated, which is critical to increasing the population immunity and ability to fight the virus. Because of misinformation, because of all sorts of lies that have been propagated out there, like it causes infertility or serious side effects. They're implanting chips in people's brains. I mean, crazy stuff. We've plateaued at about 60% of the population vaccinated. That's not good enough. And if there's one thing that could help, it would be that. It's not the only thing we need to do, but it's certainly a major problem, and has caused a major misstep.
And so the Supreme Court already pushed back against mandates against private or for private businesses, which stemmed from the White House trying to make those advancements. And so what is the next potential step that can be made on the mandate front to get to 70 or 80% of a vaccination rate in the U.S.?
Well, I think there are probably three places you can really look. One is you can mandate certain employers that have high risk situations, objectively, you know, food processor plants, other high risk environments like long-term care facilities, correctional facilities. I think that the Supreme Court is going to have to accept as critical and a targeted mandate. Second, there's travel, airplane travel, train travel. Those are interstate commerce. Interstate commerce is something the federal government has a legitimate power over. And the third, I think, is children in schools, where, you know, assistance and help with lots of things to schools can be linked to getting children, staff, and teachers vaccinated. So I think those are probably the three areas I would look at for expanding the numbers. In addition, getting boosters to the vulnerable, immunocompromised people, people over 65, those are very important as well.
You mentioned that vaccines and getting the vaccination rate up is just one part of the response that needs to be bolstered in the U.S. What else do you think needs to be done now here in the U.S., especially on the testing and masking fronts?
Well, first of all, I would say probably my second leading area is therapeutics. We have one therapy that's pretty effective and easy to administer. That's the Paxlovid drug, antiviral drug from Pfizer. It's in short supply, and one drug is not good because viruses will naturally mutate to neutralize that drug. So we need a multi-drug cocktail, and I think we need the equivalent of warp speed to develop that multi-drug cocktail. We have some other drugs. There's intravenous remdesivir, there's this monoclonal antibody, but we don't have lots of them and they're hard to give. And we also need to better connect people who test positive to get those drugs at the moment. That is not a smooth process and it's not available to all Americans. So that's probably my second top priority. And I think it's also very, very important to have tests that are ubiquitous and cheap, under $3 a throw, down from what, you know, we're paying now about $12.50 per test. And I think that's also a vital thing to do by getting more tests approved in the country, increasing the number, probably having the federal government negotiate prices down, and making those tests readily available almost everywhere. The other thing I think that is sort of would be behind the scenes, not create a lot of discomfort, is improving the indoor air quality to reduce transmission. We know that a lot of the transmission is on aerosols, those small particles in the air in indoor settings where people are close. Air currents take the aerosols all around the room. Improving the quality, whether by HEPA filters or by improving the air filtration filters that are in the air conditioning and heating systems, absolutely critical. Doesn't require a person to do anything to change their risk, but can dramatically reduce the risk of transmission, as well as other illnesses, other viruses, but also particulate matter in the air, like, you know, things that cause asthma.
Right. Doctor, if I remember correctly, the WHO had cast some doubt on remdesivir, and it really comes after they had done more long-term studies. And so how important is the improvement of long-term data reporting on everything from COVID side effects all the way to some of the very response mechanisms that we've started to put in place?
You are absolutely right. That is a very perceptive comment. And I would say it's not just things like long-term implications on remdesivir. We need better data on long COVID. We don't know its frequency. Numbers are all over the map. We have some recent data that suggests that, in fact, if you get a vaccine, you do better. And the question is, you know, if you get a vaccine soon after you get infected, does that help? A recent study actually out today or yesterday suggests that's very important. We need to also look at how long those side effects last. Do they go away? What proportion of people go away? We don't have that kind of long-term data. And it's a little surprising we don't have it, because we've known about long COVID for, you know, call it a year and a half. Half a year into COVID, we knew people were having persistent symptoms. We should have started big studies right then and there. And by a year later, 15 months later, we should have that those kind of data.
Doctor, you have a recent op-ed in the New York Times discussing China's zero COVID policy. And in that, you write, to use your words, its pursuit of zero COVID will prove to be a huge mistake. The policy has left it wholly unprepared for what will become endemic COVID. Can you explain more of what you mean by this and how this could carry implications for the rest of the world?
We're not getting rid of COVID. It's going to be around. How bad it is, we don't know. But we do know that people who are not don't have an immune response to COVID. So people who are unvaccinated or haven't been infected, they are at much higher risk of getting serious and severe consequences, being hospitalized and dying. And the Chinese, because their vaccines really don't work and because there hasn't been hardly any COVID in the country, do not have a very good population level immunity. And therefore, when Omicron spreads, it's much more dangerous, more sick people. And I think that's a real problem. To date, the way the Chinese have handled this is by just locking down tens of millions of people for weeks at a time. But when you have something as contagious and spreads as easily as Omicron, that is going to be like a whack-a-mole problem. Eventually, they're going to have to open up. Now, they don't want to do that quickly. They don't want to do that quickly because of the Winter Olympics, and they're going to great lengths to prevent people from spreading it who are in the Olympic bubble. And they don't want to do it ahead of the October Communist Party meeting when Xi is supposed to be elevated for a third term. And I think these are their considerations. You know, they're going to need a new vaccine if they're going to try to recognize endemic COVID, or they're going to end up sealing themselves off from the rest of the world and having these very severe Chinese style lockdowns, which are nothing like the lockdowns in the United States, that will be quite profound and quite damaging.
Doctor, we appreciate your insights on all of these topics. Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel is University of Pennsylvania Vice Provost of Global Initiatives, as well as former White House Health Policy Advisor.